sometimes you cannot. But a friend of this show is someone I think all of you know, Joe Montaldo. Joe is the national director of ICAR, and we'll talk about that a little bit. He is also a broadcaster. He has a show, and he has a network, and his network carries the Kevin Smith Show. So I gave a call to Joe Montaldo this afternoon, and I asked him, actually, I didn't get to talk with him. He was in a meeting, but I guess that, who was it that I talked to, Joe?
Oh, that was my wife, Lynn.
Okay, I asked her. I thought it was your wife because she said, yeah, I'm sure he'll do it. She answered for you before she even talked to you, and that's usually how wives do. They know you're going to do it because they said so. So, but anyway, Joe very graciously agreed to help us out tonight, and I certainly appreciate, on short notice, Joe stepping in here. Let me say this, too, and this is very important. Joe is very active and very knowledgeable in the field of UFOs and other anomalies that we talk about on this show. And I thought tonight I would throw several anomalies your direction, Joe, and just see what you think about them. And we'll just kind of off the top of our heads discuss some of these things that are going on. And see what you think. So, welcome back to the show. I'm glad you're here.
Well, it's always a pleasure of mine. I love coming on your show. You know, it's one of my favorite shows. Speaking of that, I wanted to talk to you anyway. I was looking at the other day. I think I got to double check. But last time I checked, the show that you and I and Jerry did is over 250,000 downloads now.
Well, that's good. That was a lot of fun. Let's do it again.
You see that? I didn't think we were that entertaining, but, you know, I guess when you're on I end, it's a little different than when you're on the audience's end, but I always love doing it. While I'm thinking about that, too, I'm going to be ET UFO Congress in Boyden, New Jersey next weekend, April 24th and 25th, guys. So if you're up there in Yankee Land and you want to come see me, I'll definitely be there. I'll be lecturing 2 days. 2 hours each day, advanced lectures too, stuff y'all don't get to hear me talk about much, so y'all should come and check it out. I had to get that shameless plug in.
All right, well, that's not a problem. And where is this going to be?
It's Bordentown, New Jersey. I don't know why I can't spit that out. I keep wanting to say Bordentown, but it's Bordentown, New Jersey.
Well, the problem is, see, you're a southern boy and you're talking about a Yankee town.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get it said.
It is, and I love picking on my Yankee friends, but it's actually nice for me because we have a big following in New York and up in Philly and other places around there, so it'll be nice to get to see some of these people in person. It's one of the reasons I like to go speak at conferences. It's not like they pay me a lot of money. Some of them do, but some of them don't. This is kind of a freebie deal here, but I like to go because I get to meet not just the fellow ufologists, because I can talk to them, you know, a lot pretty much anytime I want these days, but I get to meet the people who, you know, listen to the station or work for the organization or that are involved with us in some shape, form, or fashion, and it's nice. And what I really like is a lot of times contactees that I'm working with will come up and see me, and to me it's much better to get to meet them in person. I can really judge people in person much, much better. You know,
mm-hmm.
Speech and voice and facial recognition is one of the things I took in business school, and, you know, it's just a nice thing to have when you're talking to contactees. Should be interesting. Guys, I've never been there before, so I don't know.
Well, if you can't even say the name, what makes you think you can find the town?
Well, I was going to drive, but nobody will let me drive. Everybody's on my butt and wanting me to fly, so I guess I'm going to fly up to Newark and get them to pick me up. I really wanted to drive in. I mean, it's this time of year, that's a beautiful drive up through the Virginias and top of the Georgia and Alabama. It's beautiful up there this time of year and up in Tennessee, but they're like, no, you need to fly, man. You don't need to drive. It's like, you know, 20-something hours. I'm like, guys, come on. I'll be there a day, 2 days, come back 2 days. No, so I'm going to fly. I'll probably fly out Friday morning. I should be in.
Well, I hope you have a nice flight. And we're going to talk about flights.
Okay.
Do what?
No, I just said I'm just leery about flying in New York.
Well, we're going to be talking about flights tonight. Let's dive in with now. You know, on this show, we don't get into politics, but politicians get into our show sometimes.
Oh yeah.
And so we're not going to talk about politics, but today President Obama made a speech down in I believe he was in Florida.
Yeah.
At the Kennedy Space Center, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he made a big speech about the future of NASA. And I've seen and heard responses from scientists and astronauts, former astronauts, today. And for the most part, they are not buying what he had to say. Here's the deal, and then I'll tell you the question.
Okay.
We're going to retire the space shuttle. We will not have a manned space vehicle until after 2012, and they're shooting for a possible 2015. Mm-hmm. We are going out of the astronaut flying business. We can send hitchhikers up to space with the Russians. But we are not going to have a manned space vehicle until about 2015, once they retire the shuttle fleet. Now, what we heard today is, well, this new direction for NASA is actually going to get more astronauts into space faster and do more space exploration than we could do if we continued on the path we were on. But by switching paths in this way, we are stopping the production of a manned space vehicle. We're at least severely interrupting it.
Yeah.
All right. So I've got a couple of questions. First of all, what do you think? Do you think this is the route we need to go? Or do you think that we should continue building the spacecraft that they were already building, and by the way, it's going to cost them $9 billion to shut it down.
Yeah, they got to pay off all them contracts.
Mm-hmm. So whether we get a space vehicle or we don't get a space vehicle, we have to pay for the space vehicle.
Yeah. And that was dumb. That was dumb. I got to be honest with you. I've been really mixed ever since I heard this. I got a sneak preview of a friend of mine in politics a couple of days ago. He told me about it, and then Yahoo had it on. I guess they picked it up early yesterday morning and talked about it. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for a space program. I mean, I'm a big space nut, so I want to see a space program. But, and I do understand some of his views. You know, I've had issues with the moon thing myself. I do think we need a presence on the moon, but I don't know if we need to go to the moon before we go to Mars. So, you know, there, him and I may be a little bit more close in agreement, but the way he's doing it, Orion is already prototyped drawings and stuff like that. They got most of that stuff out there. I know we're going to have to pay off Boeing and several other large companies. And when something that bothered me today, and I don't know if this is subliminal or something we need to check into, but when he was doing that lecture today, he didn't say anything about catching rides with the Russians. He said catching rides with commercial partners to put our satellites up and bring our astronauts into space. Now, I know NASA was looking for funding right after he cut a lot of their money, shortly after he became president, and they were talking with commercial industries about developing some type of civilian space program for ferrying stuff like this. So it's a tough one. NASA's going to lose about 7,000 people. This is going to generate about 2,500 jobs. I don't understand why we're ditching a program that's already in the works. If you don't want to go to the moon, that's fine. We don't have to go to the moon. But we need a Mars manned program, and I know he doesn't understand this, or he wouldn't have done this. A non-manned program, government doesn't like to give money to NASA when there's not people involved. I've watched them over the years. When we went on that cheaper, better, faster thing where we were launching probes all over the cosmos and half of them were crashing and stuff, that didn't work. And this is basically the same type of program. I do like the idea of building smaller craft to getting to places like the shuttle and I mean, getting to places like the space station. But I find it ironic that we own the International Space Station, and I mean we own the International Space Station. The Russians haven't even paid us yet. And we're going to be hitchhiking rides to our own space station. There just something seems wrong about that, Kevin. And I want the Russians to be involved because maybe it'll foster some goodwill between us, or maybe the Chinese or the Indians. But still, we're supposed to be the largest, most advanced, most powerful nation in the world, and we got to hitchhike.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong with that.
Well, I agree. Here's what I think. If we are going out of the astronaut business, which we are, I see no reason for NASA at all.
That's true.
The purpose of NASA is the exploration of space, not just the research of space. Now, when you send a probe, you're researching. You can't explore till you actually send humans, because humans make critical decisions about, hey, we ought to go left instead of right. Let's go over that next ridge over there. Let's see what's over that. These critical decisions cannot be made by robots. Now, there are people that say, oh, yeah, there have been great advances in artificial intelligence. Well, great advances still give you primitive capabilities. You have to have a human there to make decisions. You have to have a human to see and explore and report. So I'm not for shutting down robotic space missions, but I am also not for pretending that is space exploration, because it is not.
We're gonna do that. We can let some private company launch space probes in the space, and they'll probably do a better job than NASA.
They're already doing it.
Yeah, and at a better price. So I mean, I'm with you on this. I mean, if we're not gonna have a manned space program, I don't really see the need for NASA, other than a way to funnel some money out to somebody laundering it or something. But we're in a rough spot right now in our country, and NASA's in a really rough spot. You know, I was listening today because of this new program Obama's doing. They're going to have to close, they don't know for sure, but the Michoud facility in New Orleans, it's one of the assembly plants. And it was getting part of the work to assemble the Orion. So they're telling them today, you can pretty much go ahead and start packing up. So what's bothering me about a lot of that is because NASA's now looking for corporate funding, and they're looking for corporations to get involved with them. Well, in a way, that's a good thing, but in a way, that's a bad thing, because corporations don't have to adhere to certain things like selling technologies to foreign governments. So it's allowing, you know, certain technologies that we keep close to our heart to get into China or Russia's hands like that. So this is a bad move all the way around. I just don't know if there's anything we can do about it. Well, it's got to still get ratified by Congress, so there's always the hope. There's always the hope that...
My friend, hoping that Congress is going to respond to the will of the people...
Oh, I gave that one up.
...is a pipe dream.
Oh, yeah, I gave that one up.
Well, they are going to respond. They respond by ignoring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll get a response. It'll be a deaf ear. Okay, now, let's move from NASA to Earth... And, oh, by the way, NASA's been looking for a new manned vehicle since all this happened, and they found one, Toyota.
Okay, I'm going to let that one slide.
All right, let's talk about some stuff happening here on Earth. There was a big earthquake over in Mexico here a couple of weeks ago. And right after that, there was an earthquake off the coast of Sumatra. And now there's been one in China, right around somewhere near 600 people killed in that one. And then within the past 24 hours, a volcano in Iceland has erupted and has sent an enormous ash cloud into the atmosphere. It's bad enough that the UK has grounded all air flights, no flights in or out because they're afraid. You know, the jet engines, when they get up there where the ash is, they suck all that volcanic ash in, which is, of course, little tiny volcanic rocks. You know, I mean, they're sand size, but it sucks it in and destroys the jet engines. So they've shut down. And let's see, authorities in Ireland, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Belgium closed their airspace. France shut down for 24 airports, including the main hub of Charles de Gaulle in Paris. Several flights out of the U.S. had to double back. They couldn't get there. Heathrow Airport, normally one of the world's most busy, it shut down. I mean, this volcano.
Nah, guys, that's not going to happen unless it's actually real. You're just not going to get that to happen. But these guys pretty much agree on this, and that's scary in itself. That you've got, you know, these space agencies going, well, you know, this is true, and it's definitely going to heat things up. Nobody will say, though, Kevin, you know, what should we expect? Is it going to be like what's his name, Paul Lavalette? I always pronounce his name wrong. Like what he says or something along those lines. Is this a survivable event or is this a mass extinction event? That's what worries me, that they're just not telling us in three generations or five generations or a thousand generations from now, everybody bites the big one.
Well, I'll tell you something. It could be both mass extinction and survivable.
That's true.
It could be a situation where the majority of population doesn't make it. But there are survivors. It could be one of those kinds of events. Think of Hiroshima. Most of the population of Hiroshima was either killed or seriously injured when that atomic blast took place. But people did survive the blast. Some did. And, you know, maybe with lots of medical problems, but some did survive. Well, if you translate that from Hiroshima to planet-wide, you could be looking at something like that. I'll tell you something. I think that we are going to have lots and lots of natural disasters with increasing frequency for the next few years. And then I think it'll settle down. In the process, it's going to kill a lot of people. That tsunami that you mentioned killed over 250,000 people a few years ago. What was it, 1996? No, it was 2000, wasn't it? 1999, Christmas Day, 1999.
Oh, yeah, it was the one that had the 50-foot drop. Yes, the one that was caused by that.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we shall return right after this. Some of the music you hear right here on the Kevin Smith Show comes from the independent artists at music.podshow.com. Great music, and most of it you can download for free. Check it out.
Don't be out of the loop. Sign up for the K-Files e-zine at kevinsmithshow.com.
Welcome back to the show and my guest, Joe Montaldo. Joe, during the break we were talking about the controversy. A lot of people say there is no Planet X. And yet we've had NASA scientists that have said that we don't know what it is. This was back in 1983. We don't know what it is, but we have detected something out there, and it's huge. And that was the chief scientist on the IRAS satellite program, and which was an infrared imaging program. And he says, we don't know what it is, but it's huge. And then all of a sudden, that was hushed up, and there was never any more said about it. There is a group of scientists right now looking for, and maybe they have found, but looking for what people refer to as Planet X, because actually it couldn't be Planet X actually now, because the X stands for 10, and we just kicked one out of the family, Pluto. So Planet 9, they're looking for it because they say that all of the data says that it's got to be there. Something is causing these anomalies in orbital patterns of the planets and rotational patterns of the planets and things happening with the Oort and the Kuiper belt. And so they say it's got to be out there. And one group of scientists says that we are in a binary star system, and that maybe it's being caused by our other star.
You know, there's a lot of stuff out there these days on the information. Anything that the only problems I ever had with, like, stuff like Planet X or things like that is there's lack of evidence in our own solar system for it. But now there's a couple things I want to clarify here. There could be lots of planets, rogue planets out there. There could be other suns nearby. Frankly, we've really scanned everything around our planet for about 50 light years. So if it's out there, it's got to be a dark, maybe a brown dwarf, something like that. But even that would be detectable by now. But ruling out large planets moving around, you can't rule them out because rogue planets are rogue planets. We know they exist. But rogue planets mean just that. They're rogue planets. They're usually not in set orbits. They're just usually wildly flying throughout the cosmos. My problem with Planet X always has been the same thing. There's the Oort cloud, and then there's the asteroid belt. Okay. There's no way in or out of the galaxy on an elliptical orbit that you have to cross through them. There's just no way through it. And then if you come in from bottom to top, everything in both those clouds will be drawn to the center. And see, there's simply no evidence for that either. So by using physics, you can rule out some things right off the bat, like the fact that when they say it has a 36-year orbit, well, there's nothing in our history in the last 5,000 years that says that. The Chinese don't say that, and the Egyptians don't say that, neither do the Mesoamericans. They don't have a planet that size passing by Earth. But most importantly, anything five times the size of Earth passing through the solar system would do one of two things. Pretty much wipe out all life on Earth any way it went. You're going to die. Secondly, it would cause major catastrophes. I doubt it could escape Jupiter's gravitational field. And the reason I bring that up is there happens to be a debris field, which we were talking about, between Mars and Jupiter that has enough debris to create a planet about five times the size of Earth. That may actually be Planet X, or what's left of Planet X. But ruling out large bodies, we find large bodies out there all the time, so you can't, in this situation, you can't say it's impossible because it's not. But you can say a lot of what the myths and legends were isn't true because there's no evidence in our own solar system to support it. Doesn't mean something might not come flying through. It just means that in the last 10,000 or the last 100,000 years, actually in the last couple million years, nothing's. Now, the last time that we may think that something may have passed through was about 65 million years ago, because this is a weird coincidence. Earth, Mars, and Venus all went ape poo right around that time. They all did. We had the mass extinction here on Earth. The rest of Mars' atmosphere was ripped off, and Venus went into super global warming. That's a big coincidence. You know, more than likely something came through, but that still, that was 60-something million years ago. But since then, in the last couple of million, you can't find anything in the geological record other than Paul Lavalette's 26,000-year pulse. You can't really find anything else that suggests it. I mean, planets that big are going to leave debris. We're going to get bombarded by dust. There's just certain things that you can't escape when these kind of things are inside your solar system. Passing near a solar system or outside of it is a different thing. But fortunately for me, I was well versed in physics my entire life. But I don't rule anything out when it comes to this. I can't believe the Sumerian things because the new translations say that this thing was about the size of the moon and could move back and forth, orbit the planet. It sounds more like a spaceship than it did a planet. So the original translation, which was done by, what was his name?
Sitchin.
Oh, what is his name? Ike, what?
Oh, David Icke?
Yeah, well, I never can remember his name.
Well, there's Zechariah Sitchin.
Yeah, and sorry, thank you. And then, but the translations have been updated since this point. Certain words were wrong. They realized what they were talking about, what they were describing was probably some type of ship, not a huge planet five times the size of Earth, because frankly, if you could see it in the night sky, it was crushing our little planet to pieces. I mean, it was causing ungodly volcanoes, earthquakes, you know, what we're talking about now, just in a thousand, maybe a million times greater aspect than it is now. So I say that, you know, there's something out in space, and they know there's something out there as far as like the red dwarf galaxy they found inside of ours. They know things like that are out there. But trying to find rogues like those two icy moons we found, or those icy planetoids we found about half the size of Pluto, man, they just popped up one day. You know, we didn't know they were out there, and all of a sudden, boop, there they were. And we know there's some big bodies inside the Oort cloud, but they seem to be in elliptical orbit with like everything else. So they're not moving across the galaxy. They're in orbit with the rest of us, and they're not crossing our path, at least not yet. Now, there may have been a time they were doing it, and something hit or changed, and orbits all changed. You know, it is kind of like a giant pinball machine, guys. I mean, come on. If you look at a solar system, I mean, you know, if you time it just right and you start bouncing off of planets, it's going to cause some major catastrophes. But so I'm on the fence. I mean, I'll probably always will be on the fence until I see a giant planet looming in the sky.
Well, see, if you see a giant planet looming in the sky, you'll probably have just enough time to say, well, I'll be damn, I was wrong. Bam!
That's about what I'll be saying too. Well, you know what? I wish I could go on the air just to let everybody know I think I messed this one up.
Yeah, but on the flip side of that, it doesn't do any good, even if we knew for sure that Nibiru existed, and we knew for sure it was coming. So what? What are you going to do about it?
And that's a good point. What are we going to do about it? Die? Maybe we might get some people off the planet. I don't even think. You know, while we're talking about this, can the aliens stop a rogue planet that size?
I don't know.
I don't even know if they can. Maybe that's what they're here for. Maybe they.
Well, we couldn't get anybody off the planet. we don't have enough Toyotas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we could get them off the planet, we're not going to get them outside the solar system, and that's, you're going to have to go to another solar system because this one's going to be kind of messed up for a while.
Yeah. Well, we might could pay the Russians enough, you know, but they can only send three at a time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would be a very slow process. You wouldn't get too many out of here.
Oh, yeah, that dwarf galaxy is Sagittarius, guys. What's the name of it, Sagittarius? It's actually passing between us. It's passing through the galaxy on a it's not on the elliptical. It's passing up and down. It's passing right through the galaxy. It's actually, it's going through, as it's trying to go through our galaxy, it's being sucked back down and sucked out and being mixed into the rest of the spiral of our galaxy. This thing is pretty big, guys. It contains a lot of planets and a lot of stars, and they're pretty sure the first time it passed off, it deposited us here. I'm actually reading while we're talking about it. And it's the Sagittarius Galaxy, and it's definitely becoming part of the Milky Way. So, see, in some ways, that lends help to the planet X, guys. In some ways, it suggests that it might be this is what they were talking about, not the actual planet X, but hey.
All right, we have to step away for a break, Joe, and we'll be back right after this.
Phoenix, Arizona, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. And what I'd like for us to do, Joe, is open up the telephone line so that our audience can join us. And, folks, if you have a question or comment for Joe Montaldo, the telephone number, the main number here in the studio, is 623-444-5889. the toll-free number, if you have a calling plan where you can call our main number without it costing you a long distance, please do that. But if it would cost you a long distance charge in the USA or Canada, you can call us toll-free 888-223-4599. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number internationally. So there's two things you can do. You can use Skype if you have one of their special accounts there where you can dial telephone numbers. Use that and call us at 623-444-5889. It'll work from anywhere in the world. Or use our flash message feature. You have to be outside of the USA, outside of Canada, in order for the flash message to work for you. Even if you send me one and you're inside the USA and you're inside of Canada, my spam filters are going to kill it. And we won't read it on the air because I won't see it. All right, so let's see who's on the phone with us. Are you ready, Joe?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm always ready for calls. I love them.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Tony from Alberta.
Hello, Tony.
How are you tonight?
All right.
Good.
I just have a comment. I've been listening to Seda Talk for a long time, and they've been saying since 1995 and to the present, everything that is happening now, they said would happen, and it is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there must be something to that. So what are your thoughts on that?
You're talking Zeta Talk, Nancy Leader, right? Is that what you're talking about?
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Actually, I've talked with Nancy a few times. There's actually a manuscript on the Internet. Actually, it's one of the shows I did with her. You can go read it. There's some stuff I can agree with on Nancy, and there's some stuff I just, as an alien researcher myself, 26 years in the field, that I have to take issue with because, frankly, I have more information about the Grays than she does. But the thing of it is a lot of people have made predictions of what's going on the planet right now. My big problem with this is this any different than 100 years ago or 500 years ago or 10,000 years ago or 100,000 years ago? It seems like our planet runs in cycles. So it would make sense to me that certain medium-type people or psychic-type people or contactees would sense these kind of events approaching. It would actually make sense to me that they would. Whether or not it's going to do us any good, that's anybody's bet. But here's a good one for you, and it's something for everybody to think about. We know there's great monuments all over our planet. There's a funny coincidence to these great monuments. They all line up with their prospective constellations 12,500 years ago, 10,500 BC, 12,500, and this is a fact, by the way. Orion lines up with the Great Pyramids at 12,500 years ago. Leo lines up with Sphinx at 12,500 years ago. Angkor Wat lines up with Draco at 12,500 years ago. The Stonehenge Island, the seven major things, line up with the Seven Sisters at 12,500 years ago. There's several other ones besides this. So something happened on this planet 12,500 years ago. Somehow or another, that information, or at least part of that, was overlaid into our memories because our ancestors, 6,000 to 10,000 years later, built monuments to these things, which suggests there was some kind of great cosmic event or some kind of great event on this planet that they're trying to remind us of. So I don't really take issue with people that see it or know something's coming. I take issue with how they assimilate that information and how they assimilate it to the public. And so that's where me and Nancy differ. The fact that, you know, she may or may not seen something coming, like I said, there's a lot of people seeing that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, there is this, too. 2,000 years ago, it was written into a book called Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching it. It's playing out like it's a script for a play. And it's just amazing to watch. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there. Hey, Joe. Hey, yeah, you're running a great room tonight, too. I think you saw me arguing with but I think you'd be a little bit of a troll earlier.
Yeah, I've seen the Planet X was getting kind of heated in there.
Well, not just that, but the guy was berating somebody that probably doesn't bother doing research himself on, probably some agent.
Well, if y'all get crazy, you can always hit me up in instant message. I can hit the bounce button. what we got for you tonight?
Well, you know, you're talking about this ancient civilization, and yeah, all these alignments. You know, I've been reading, I've pretty much been relegating all my reading to a lot of Graham Hancock stuff and brushing up on a lot of stuff that he's written over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just use your plain logic and also the archaeoastronomy. These things do line up to these ancient cultures. But, you know, I tend to take the Graham Hancock road and stating that I think it was our culture that was destroyed about 12 to 15,000 years ago. And
okay.
I think... And this is what caused, you know, the massive flooding, the three abrupt meltings of all the ice caps, the major floodings that happened about 17 to 12,000 years ago. And, you know, and I honestly think that this calamity was solar system wide, because if you look at what happened here on this planet and what wiped out the advanced civilizations that we had all over this planet, but it also greatly affected Uranus. It tilted on its side. Something knocked that planet on its side, obviously. Something also damaged its moon, and also whatever killed Mars might have also been what affected our planet about 12 to 15,000 years ago. And I think it has a lot. I think precession has a lot to do with it. It's,
yeah.
You know what happened about 12 to 15,000 years ago? That's an exact half precessional cycle. You know, the great
year
26.
Something happened. It's just trying to figure out what mm-hmm. happened. And it amazes me that the ancient Egyptians could use mm-hmm. precession and go back 6,000 years and line these monuments up so precise. That amazes me. I mean, come on, we're talking Stone Age technologies here, and they had not only did they have an excellent understanding of precession, which is the wobble of the planet and going backwards in time, but they gridded the planet without really ever leaving Egypt to, I think science said, 2 degrees accuracy. That's amazing. Half of us couldn't do that with a computer today. That kind of stuff amazes me. It really does. But it also tells us that something happened, that the ancestors, and we can say warning or not warning, or maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, I don't really know. All I know is they built these monuments for us to remember, and we're not remembering, at least not in an open society form anyway.
Absolutely, and this stuff gets ridiculed in the, you know, in the lamestream media and whatnot. And, you know, talking about this whole precessional cycle thing, you know, just like our planet goes through seasonal changes, and those seasonal changes are traumatic on you know, the respective hemispheres and when they happen, you know. And if you're going through this whole cycle around the galaxy, wouldn't you say that these, I guess you could call them galactic seasons, and these seasonal changes that happen, I guess, every 12,000, approximately 12,000 years, they would have a traumatic effect on the entire solar system, and the evidence seems to show that they did.
Well, that takes us, it's Fire on Earth, I can't remember what it's called, it's Dr. Paul Avalette, I'm butchering his name, by the way. He wrote some really, really good books, he's got a good video out there. He says every 26,000 years, the core gives off a cosmic pulse, and that pulse, it takes 26,000 years for it to reach the planet, and you actually see it as a blue star long before it gets here. But then eventually one day it fills our solar system with dust, and the dust eventually chokes out the sunlight on the planet, but it closes global warming for about 1,000 years, then it causes about 5 to 10,000 years of ice age, and then we recover. By the way, he told science that they would find X amount of this material in the soil every 12 to 26,000 years, or in the polar ice caps, they found it. So, you know, his theory has actually been, it's going further than a theory now. And there's been cycles where it's been every 12,500 years, and there's been cycles where it's been every 26,000 years. Anyway it goes, it's not a good thing for us. I've heard people talk about ways to deflect the dust away from the galaxy, but we don't have that kind of technology right now. And all of these, any of this stuff we're talking about could be contributing to warming of this planet. There's so much going on in our solar system that it's hard to pin this down to any one thing, especially as naive as we are about the galaxy.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Caller, just hang on. I'll get to you here in just a second. You know, they just recently, last week, there was a report out that scientists have now discovered 90% more galaxies than in the universe than they knew existed. They thought they had it mapped, and now they've discovered 90% more. So, we don't know very much about our universe. We, you know, if you piled everything we know about the universe in one pile, and the size of that pile in comparison to what there is yet to know would be microscopic. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Mike from Coral Springs, Florida.
Hello, Mike.
Florida, all right.
How you doing? Good. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
Good. I'd like to ask you a question. Joe, you mentioned one time, I think, that you said the Betty and Barney Hill case you thought was a MILAB military abduction.
Yeah, there's a, I actually still do. Well, no, let's clarify so everybody understands what
we're talking about. Yeah, I want to clarify what you said on that.
Okay. I believe that the Hills were abducted in Canada, okay? Barney, in his own words, and Betty, in her own words, and there's several interviews done in the 70s that you can hear this for yourself that are still available on the Internet, by the way. They didn't know where they checked in. They couldn't remember the name of the hotel. They couldn't even tell you what the hotel looked like they checked in. They couldn't remember where they had breakfast that morning they got up. And when they asked the gentleman for directions, one described him as a policeman, and one described them totally, absolutely different. These things are classic alien abduction in the old days with the missing time and not knowing where you were and being disorientated. This is classic. I mean, classic alien abduction. Okay, now, flash to later the next day, we're in the United States. We're driving back, crossing the border, coming to the U.S. Okay, they said on the hypnosis that they were pulled over, flagged over on the side of the road. Four men escorted them to this so-called craft, walked them up a metal ramp, where they proceeded to do things like take skin samples. They were taking scrapings from their skin, taking blood, taking fluid samples. Basically, they were doing what the government does when you've been exposed to something. I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of dealing with any of the disease control agencies. I did when I was in the service. And, man, let me tell you what. They come grab you. They take blood. They scrape skin. They take hair. They take, man, look, anywhere they can get some kind of sample, they're taking. They even clip your fingernails. And this is what Betty and Barney Hill were describing. The rooms they were describing had conventional sliding drawers, stainless steel tables. This is classic military. I mean, classic. To the needles and everything, this is classic military. I think in Betty's case especially, that she got confused. She confused her alien abduction memories with her military abduction memories, which, by the way, is not uncommon when dealing with this situation. We, as a researcher, we've seen this in other cases, so I don't know why she would be different. And personally, I really think that the true abductee in this case was Barney. Barney's the one that had the psychological problems as a young man. He was the one that was always in therapy. He was the one his entire life that was dealing with stuff that made him sound like a contactee. I think Betty was along for the ride, like a lot of spouses are, when there's abductions going on. But so I really think that they botched this case severely when they did it, but it's like no one paid attention to what they were saying about Canada. No one. They just ignored it and said, okay, well, this was alien that happened in the United States. And in Barney's own words, and I mean at least 100 times, he describes these people. Black pants, black shirts, black duck-billed caps. I don't know any aliens of any contactees that are described like that, but I have heard many, 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 many military people described like that.
All right, let me ask a question. Are you saying then that what you have is two separate incidents?
Yes.
One was an alien abduction, and then one they got scooped up by the military for tests.
Yes, and that's why there's three separate sets of memories for the Hills. There is their conscious memories, their dream memories, and their regression memories, which all three are different. So what happened was is somewhere along the line, because back in the day, we're talking in the 60s, with 61 here, I doubt the government's mind control or its ways of recapping memories were really perfected at the time. And I do think they had bleed over. I think, you know, they were seeing, you know, some the stuff that happened in Canada was bleeding in to the military abduction in the United States. And like I said, we've seen it before. It's not the first time we've seen this. And I just think they blew the case. Now, I contacted Kathleen Maldred about it. I was quite, you know, nice. And I sent her a copy of the ex-conference lecture I did last year on this, which, by the way, is available on the Paranormal Radio Network site. If you can't see the video, but the audio part of the lecture is available there. And, you know, it's hard-hitting. I use their own stuff against them in this, by the way. Everything that I quote in that lecture – comes from those two books or from the actual regression tapes that I have and some of the audio clips. But I use their information to prove this. And I got to tell you, George Norrie told me on the air there's no way you'd ever change his mind about Betty and Barney Hill. And when I was through with that night on the coast, it changed his mind about Betty and Barney Hill. Because frankly, the evidence says the abduction happened in Canada. The actual physical alien abduction happened in Canada. The government was fully functionally aware of this because the Hills were involved in the military up to their eyeballs. They had military people living in their house. They were friends with the military. They were on the base. They were just in. It was just there. So they knew about it. They crossed over. The United States grabbed them. Did their typical, let's check out, see if we can find any evidence, you know, what these kind of aliens might be, what kind of things these aliens are doing or using. I mean, even when they handed Betty the book, they handed her a hardback covered book with English writing in it.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next phone call. And caller, you are, by the way, Mike, thanks for the call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Yeah, Ryan.
Hi, Washington.
Joe, I listen to your show every week. I love it. And Kevin's show. Do you think it's weird that the area where Travis Walton was abducted was is now declared as officially Area 51 on the map? That's
you know,
kind of strange.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you brought that up because there was that. And then when Travis was on my show a couple of months back, he alluded to, like, the military tie-in with his abduction. And he even talked about the guy that the military guy or the FBI guy that was in the woods the night of his abduction. There just seems to be – there's something missing in his case. And actually, when I really got to talk to him offline and really got to talk to him, I realized there's more to his case than even he's telling us about. There's some stuff missing in there because I caught him off guard a couple of times by asking him questions that just no one had asked him before. And he really opened up in that interview and really talked about a lot of stuff. And there seems to be something else there. So – He might be, you know, and I've said this before. Every time I think I found a one-time abductee, eventually they turn out to be a multiple abductee, like, you know, the Pascagoula bunch, the Allagash bunch, a couple of others besides that. In the end, when you really got down and did the really nitty-gritty research, they turned out to be multiple abductees. And I really hate to say this, but I think in Travis' case, if you really got deep into this and you really regressed them, I think you're going to find that. And one of the other reasons I say that is because more and more we're finding that the majority of the people that are seeing UFOs are contactees. They may not know it at the time, but eventually, and I'm not talking about if you've seen something like a UFO for the first time and you've never seen anything before or after. People that have multiple sightings usually turn out to be contactees. I think it's because they're touched, that maybe because they are contactees that they're more open or maybe they're paying more attention or maybe it's something that's been turned on in their head where they can see these craft. And it's a really weird thing, but and it is something that we work on. It's an ongoing theory, let's put it like that.
Ryan, I have a question for you. You said that this area where Travis Walton was working when he was abducted is now part of Area 51?
Well, I was asking Joe because I had heard that the area was designated. I don't think it's part of Area 51, but I think I don't know. Joe might know better if
they code worded it Area 61, but everybody calls it Area 51. But
well, maybe I'm wrong about that. I just heard it somewhere. You never know what's true and what's not true.
They did that whole side of that mountain. They just kind of took it over for some reason.
Who did?
They've been talking about that for a while.
Who took it over?
Marcus had to move to the other side of the mountain, and they were just kind of wondering what was going on. But
Joe, who took it over?
They said the feds took it over.
Okay, what is the Air Force or the Army or?
They just said the feds. They didn't say anything about any military at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been something that's been bothering me too, because you know, like Pine Gap is run by the Secret Service and Area 51 is run by the NSA. Or I might have it backwards. But anyway, Yeah, NSA runs the one in Area 51, and CIA runs the one in Australia. And they rarely ever let military run this kind of thing. So whatever's going on up there is being run through one of the security offices. But I don't know. I haven't heard anything else. I haven't heard they were doing anything. And I haven't heard anything about any big equipment being brought in. But these days, you know, we have stealth planes. We can fly in and drop stuff. We don't have to bring them in via the roads anymore. So you know, there's no way of knowing what was going on up there. And I know some town folk looked into it because I had gotten some calls about it about a year ago. I mean, it might have been 2 years ago. Asking if we knew any information, but I only told them what I had heard, and really I haven't really heard anything else. They just said that they took over like half the mountain, and they threw off everybody off the mountain. And see, that was funny that that came up, because when I was asking Travis Walton, did you ever think they may have seen you and been waiting for you? Because, you know, I told him, it's pitch black, you're driving down the side of the mountain with your headlights on. You're like a beacon in the dark, you know, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about a mountain in the middle of nowhere, guys, and he's got his bright lights on, cruising down in his old rickety, noisy truck jumping around with lights bobbing all over. I mean, he was like a beacon out there. And that freaked him out, by the way. He never even thought of it like that. You could just tell it just freaked him out. And I said, they might have been sitting there waiting for y'all to show up, guys. I said, but any way it goes, Travis, there had to be a reason they were sitting there. Right there. What were they doing? What were they doing in a clearing of some cut down trees just sitting there? They didn't say they were drilling, that there were any beams of light or anything like that until Travis approached it. So what were they doing?
What's your theory about what they were doing?
That's I don't know. I'm with Travis on that. There had to be a reason they was there, but what it is, there's just not enough evidence on it yet to. And you know what? I've never personally, and maybe it's something I should do or get to my organization to do, I've never really seen what was in those mountain ranges. Is there high mineral contents of some specific kind? Is there uranium there? Is there something else there? That's something we should all probably look into, because I just can't see ET, unless they were taking a nap, which is possible, they would just be sitting on the side of a mountain in a clearing.
It was a lunch break.
You know?
Yeah, they were taking a lunch break.
They might have been.
Mm-hmm.
They might have been taking a siesta, and that's why Travis got hit with the beam of light, because they woke up and said, whoa, look at a human, look at a human. Might have scared him a little bit, man. Damn humans going to try to get on my craft. That's insane. But
all right, we're less than a minute away from our next break. And, you know, we've talked about a wide range of things here tonight. I'm going to delve back into a couple of things we've talked about previously because I think we need to explore them a little bit more. But I'm going to wait till we come back from this break to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. He's a UFO researcher. Investigator. He's a broadcaster. He's just a lot of things. He is the national director of ICAR as well. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines again for you. Some of the music used here on the Kevin Smith Show comes from the great independent artists at GarageBand.com. Go to GarageBand.com and check out the fabulous selection they have of great independent music by great independent artists. GarageBand.com. Check it out. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. The telephone numbers are 623-444-5889. You can reach me at that number from anywhere in the Milky Way. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599, available in the United States and Canada. Don't make the mistake, though, of thinking, oh, the main number is busy, so I'll call the toll-free number. Because the toll-free number rings to the main number. If the main number's busy, they're both busy. Joe, let's go to the telephone. And caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I've seen on the NASA channel that Barry Santora made it official about, downgrading and taken away from NASA, mentioned how, we're supposed to be planning a trip to the moon, but he says, we've already been there, so we got to think bigger and better, trying to make it sound good.
Mm-hmm.
See the whole thing, but it's pretty much official now.
Did he say which model of Toyota we're going to take?
Nope.
Okay.
He says that we got a plan for bigger and better things to take us deeper into space. And, lower orbit is not getting it anymore. And the moon's, we've been there. And so we got to think bigger, and that's supposedly their plan.
Mm-hmm.
But with your guest, I wonder, does he...
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Does he know anything more...
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Those underwater UFOs off of Canada, I don't know, is it Puget Sound? Does he know, because there's been quite a bit, out about that. Does he know anything about that?
I don't know. Why don't you ask him?
I'll tell you what I know. I know that there's been heated activity in the Puget Sound area for at least four decades that I personally know of. I don't think that it's gotten any worse or any slower than it ever has been. It's just, it kind of runs in cycles and ways. There's a steady amount of sightings in the area. A lot of underwater UFOs are seen there as well, moving in and out, going out into the Pacific, moving into Vancouver, going into Washington, into Seattle and around in those areas. It's a really hot area. It always has been. Even Oregon's a fairly hot state. Portland puts out quite a bit of sightings. But the Puget Sound areas, and this is something we learned early on, deep water areas, especially deep water areas that are connected to large cities, tend to have a high volume of sightings. And a high volume, it's like easy access. They don't have to fly in the sky. They don't have to risk, they can just come in, zip underwater, zip into wherever they're going, and do whatever it is that they're going to do while they're there. And we do find that in a lot of areas. It's one of the research tools we use to verify a hotspot, because UFOs tend to like deep water areas. It could be off the Gulf Coast, the Atlantic Coast, Pacific. They like that. And then when you have areas that have big military presence, such as the Washington State area does, that's even a bigger draw for them for some reason. And if you have a lot of national parks, which I have no idea why it matters, but we do get like literally a lot of data that says there's a lot of them that do national parks. When you have these things in a group like that, it's like candy to the aliens. I don't know how else to say it. It's almost a guarantee that if you open your eyes and you find a good spot between these areas, you're going to see some pretty substantial sightings. And it's worked for us, and it's worked for our researchers, and it's something we kept kind of tight secret in the organization for a long time, but it's a way to go out and explore and find stuff. And if you can find stuff, like I'll give you an example of a place. Here's one. Blunt Island, Florida, okay? There's a nuclear power plant there. There's an Agus Cruiser facility there where they're decommissioning Agus Cruisers. There's a beautiful park on the back bay in the water. They're just absolutely stunningly gorgeous. And there's several deep water channels coming in. One of the best photos I've seen of a portal with a UFO approaching in it was taken by my Texas State Director Jason Wilson, in that area, just as a random shot, by the way. He was just taking shots out the window while we were driving through these areas because we knew we were in a very in an area that met the criteria that we look for extreme activity. And sure enough, he got an outstanding. It's on the ICAR site. You can find it there. It was an outstanding shot.
And by the way, folks, as always, if you click our guest photograph that's on my site, it will take you to the site he just mentioned. All right, we have a flash message from John in the United Kingdom. And he says, is there a desperate search to find another Earth? And if so, could this be the reason that they expect some kind of a disaster like would happen with a Planet X? And the answer is yes, there is a frantic search on to find another Earth.
I think they already found one. I think they've known about it for a while. Because every now and then NASA lets something slip. Oh, well, you know, we're getting close to finding Earth-like planets, and now we're finding planets much smaller than Jupiter. And something I learned about our government, and this is probably true for all governments, our government, you know, it's like the stealth. This is a good example, the X-117. For years and years in the 70s, no, we don't have no stealth plane. It's a UFO or something. Well, stealth first flew in 76. And all the way up until, I think, almost 90, we didn't tell anybody we had it. But yet, this was a very advanced technology that we were flying around. But they dropped hints along the way. And that's the thing. The government has this little knack of dropping hints. I guess they figure it's their way that they're, when it comes time to disclose, no, we kind of told you about it back here. And it's just things that NASA and the European Space Agency has been saying about things they've been finding, areas they've been finding. Recently, I've seen several articles on near-Earth planets, near-to-us Earth-type planets. Like that Sagittarius galaxy I was talking about earlier, they're also talking about finding them in there because they just released a new poll that says there are 200 billion stars within 50,000 light-years of Earth. Now, our galaxy is 100,000 light-years across, so they're going to double the amount of stars they originally thought was in the Milky Way. Well, they've already doubled it once because one time they said 100 billion, now they're saying 200 billion. And as Kevin and I were talking about earlier in the show, you're going to see a much larger increase in even that number. We're just finding there's more and more and more and more. And I think when they tell us that they can find planets, we can see planets 10 times the size of Earth, that's like saying, well, you know what, guys, we're really looking at planets 2 and 3 size times Earth. We're starting to find planets that, you know, humans can live in a 2G environment. We can live in a 3G environment. We may not like it, but we can live in it. We can live in a half a G environment. These environments that we can survive in and procreate and breed and eventually will evolve to adjust to these environments.
That's the deal. You know, if they find another Earth, they're going to have to, the first thing they're going to have to do is set up a breeding colony. And I'm going to volunteer.
Yeah, well, that's going to be one of them where everybody gets three wives and three husbands. It's going to get real confusing real fast. No, that's your kid. My kid is not that ugly. Hey, but you got to do stuff like that. I mean, it's one of the things that helped man understand about evolution. When we realized in order to have a healthy population of 6 billion, there actually had to be a mixed breeding population of about 6,000. And really it was more like 60,000, but 6,000 minimum to have enough genetic material to have a race that's not considered crossbreeding. Anything less than that, we would have started seeing the really bad and the really good coming out with no real middle. And today, of course, we're more in the middle than we are on the high or low end of evolution. And that's science fact. Actually, I think they say it's 2,600, but we'll just say 6,000. But that's what you need to create a valuable population. And it rules out a lot of the evolution stuff. Do you think there was 6,000 people running around in Africa that weren't getting eaten by lions and tigers and hyenas? See, I have a hard time with that one. You know, so somewhere along the line, we had to be a big enough colony, and more than likely, it was probably broke up into 1,000 here, 5,000 here or something, but it had to be big like that. So it says a lot. In the reality, it says a lot about evolution maybe not being quite what we think it is.
I'll tell you what I think about evolution. I think that evolution, there are theories of evolution that are tenable. But Darwin, his theory, is dead. And every time I say that, I get tons of email telling me how stupid I am.
I think
that's the case. Joe, we got a call on hold here, so let's go to the phones. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan from Quebec City, Kevin.
Hello, Stefan.
Hello. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Oh, good. How you doing?
Great. Joe, I was wondering, I'm up here in Canada, and I'm part Native American, so I have a real, you know, close affinity with the Earth and all that, but my question in regards to alien abductions and contactees and stuff is, why do you suppose they keep telling us to take care of the Earth if the Earth is going to be suffering some sort of calamity or catastrophe in the future?
Well, I'm not, you know, and I hate to say it this way, but I'm not exactly sure that's what they're saying. I've been doing this for a long time. And I have my peace, love, and light side of ufology, of which I lovingly call them, which that's not what they actually are, but what's what I call them. And something I've learned, it's more like they're saying, pay attention, take care of your own, because something I learned about contactees early on, they're very bright, they're very articulate, and they're very sociable, but only inside of their groups. They're not really generally sociable with the rest of the planet. And I've noticed something, and this has really bothered me, and this is something that we can prove now because we have enough cases. They've kind of disconnected themselves emotionally from the rest of society, like they're expecting them to bite the big one in front of their face. That, coupled with one-third of our contactees having the Holocaust dream, really worries me. Whether that one-third survives, the aliens take them, they survive on a planet, it's anybody's guess. But it does seem to be that these contactees are disconnecting themselves from mainstream society. They're not becoming unsociable. They're just disconnecting their emotional ties to them. They're staying to the family. And I really think that's more the aliens that take care of where you're at, take care of what you need, and be ready for when this happens. And I think that's more of what they're saying. I just think that some of the people, because of their own personal beliefs or some of their upbringing or simply in their own way of understanding it, that's how they are interpreting the message, but I don't really think that's what it is because the evidence doesn't suggest that's what it is. Remember, and anybody who's ever heard my show knows I say this all the time, you judge everything by its actions. Any extraterrestrial that doesn't call you up on the phone and says, hey, Bill, I want to come take you for the weekend. I got some experiments I want to do. I want to give you some information and so on and so forth, is going against your moral, you're just what you are. You're a being. You're a free spirit being. You shouldn't be confined. You shouldn't be abducted. And you shouldn't be taken by force. And any time an alien
Well, actually,
does
Joe,
that,
I'm really thankful for my experiences, and they were all positive. But I do agree with the idea that saving the Earth is kind of secondary. And I have become a recluse in the last 15 years. Like I'm pretty much a loner.
Well, see that's the thing, and I see this. Now they'll hang out. Contactees will hang out with each other all day long. Man, you get them at a conference, something. They're a blast. They're sociable, they're fun, they're energetic, they got all kind of information. It's like having an encyclopedia in front of you. It's a great thing, but they're not really, you get that same group into like a mall where there's a bunch of just what they call norms. They're not going to act like that. They become withdrawn, unsociable. They really don't want to interact more than they have to. They'll go to jobs, and they usually all have decent jobs or doing stuff, but you can see this disconnectedness. Now, ICAR was the first organization to do this, but I have seen in recent years other researchers and friends of ours that have started doing this.
All right, we have to step away for a break. And, Stefan, thanks for the call. Interesting question. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on final approach. That means we've got about 9 minutes left in the show. And I want to get to another flash message we have, this one from Australia. This is from Kevin in Australia. He says, "Good day, Kevin and Joe. Joe, what is your favorite electromagnetic pulse case regarding strange awareness towards car interference or human physical contact?"
That's kind of hard. I'd have to relate something that happened to me, but I tell you what, yeah, here's one.
Joe, I don't know why. We can barely hear you. I need you to talk directly into your phone.
Is that better?
That's better.
Yeah. Sorry about that, guys. I break. I moved the mic away. But anyway, only thing I can relate to is there's cases I've read about or in cases I've been involved with, but to really relate to this, I'll give you a quick one because I know we're getting short on time. My wife and I had been on investigations way back when. I was working for MUFON at the time, way back when. And we were on a triangle case. We had seen something over Honey Island Swamp, and we chased it down like a bunch of idiots, followed it over the swamp, seen it go down in the water in the back of the Wrigley's Pass in Pirate's Cove. And make a long story short, we started seeing these bright triangles. They were flying over the area in a circular pattern, and they were overlapping. There were six of them, and they were overlapping each other. And I was on the phone with the Louisiana State Director at the time, which was Gregory Avery, and we're talking, and all of a sudden he just says, "Joe, do you really feel safe there?" And it hadn't dawned on me to what I was actually witnessing at the time. I was, the adrenaline was just pumping, and I was just pumping, and so I said, "You know what? You're probably right." I grabbed my wife, I jumped in my car, I take off down the highway, right? So Linda's got her head out the window. She said, "Here comes one from the right over the lake," and we can see one coming. It gets closer to my car. All of a sudden, it was like classic E.T. movie. I'm not kidding y'all, guys. Lights go off. The car just starts dying down. You know, it's still in drive, and there's no power, so you guys should know what that is. It's like, oh. So I'm trying to get the car in neutral, and I see this thing. It's just coming over, and it's fairly big. It's probably 100, 150 yards across. It's not like one of them giant ones, but it's big. It comes over the top of us, the car's going, and I see white lights coming up behind me, and I'm thinking, what the hell is this? All of a sudden, man, a white station wagon gets on the side of me, flashes his lights at me. I look on the side of the car, it says U.S. Navy, goes back, and on the back of the plate, it was U.S. government plates on the back, and he just drove right on by me. And nothing happened to his car, and then I'm still, I'm like, what the hell's wrong with... And, nothing's working, no power, nothing's coming on. It's like someone just disconnected the battery. And the triangle goes over, music starts playing. I mean, this is classic E.T. stuff. Music starts playing, power comes back on, car starts driving. And that, to me, was just one of those things that I realized that, you know, when I was in the Navy, because I do have a really high security clearance in the Navy, but it's not because of aliens or anything. It's because I worked on electronics on board aircraft and on board the ship. And one of the first things that we were told is that we did have operational EMP weapons. This is probably something along those lines. Not a full burst that knocks out all your electronics, just enough to drop the connections long enough so they can do what they want, and then when they turn it off, away you go. So I've experienced that personally. I know other people that experienced it, but in recent years, not so much. Maybe the last decade, I haven't really heard about that often. I really don't hear about missing time anymore. It's different stuff now. ETs, either we've got more advanced or they've got more advanced, or both, but it does seem that the styles of contact have changed.
How do you think the U.S. Navy car was able to drive right past you, no problems, while you're having problems?
Same way that our F-18s and F-14s used to stay in air back in the day with EMP shielding. It shields all the electronic components are shielded. They're usually encased. I ain't going to get into it much because that is part of my original security thing with the military, but that they have EMP shielding, guys. It wasn't so much for pulse weapons originally. It was originally developed for the B-52s so that if they got a backsplash from a blast or if a nuke went off near them, their planes would still be operational and they could still deploy their weapons. Because remember, it only messes up electronics that are on. If the electronics is off to an EMP pulse, when you turn it on, they'll be fine. It's not going to fry them unless there's power physically going to them. So there was some type of shielding. It just, the whole thing, you know what, Kevin? That was just one of the weirdest, most surreal experiences. It was like everything was in slow motion the whole night. This went on for hours. This wasn't like a 15 or 20 minute sighting. I think this spanned like 6 or 7 hours. And for those hours, I was actually on the phone with my Louisiana State Director, and we had three-wayed in with another friend of ours who was another researcher. So this was all happening. Everybody was hearing everything live while it was going on. And when I hear the recording of it, it still freaks me out because you can hear my voice. You know, you could just hear what was going on. I don't know how to explain it, but you could actually hear what was going on in my voice. It was a strange thing. I could never make it available to the public because, frankly, the amount of cursing in it, you wouldn't know what was going on half the time if I tried to clean it up. It would be like, yeah, beep, yeah, beep, 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 yeah, beep, beep. I was very...
Not suitable for broadcast, huh?
Oh, yes, entirely unsuitable for even internet and radio. It was bad.
Joe, I can't imagine that you would talk like that.
Well, I was young. I mean, I had the military. I'm not ever going to say I was an angel, y'all, but, whew, man, it was just so wild. I mean, we're in the Honey Island Swamp. By the way, this is a NASA facility we were on, all NASA land. And Linda says, what's that just passed over the road? It was a big black shadow. And I was like, what the hell? And I looked up, and there it was. You could see it go over the trees. And then it was turning back. So we're crazy, like idiots. We start chasing the thing. And then it finally got over to Honey Island, over the Pearl River, and we couldn't see it anymore. It went up the river. So we're like, well, we'll go check out some other spots. And as we were headed back to the other spot, we seen it cross back over interstate. And apparently other people seen it, because I've seen a couple of cars swerve in us and a couple of people pull over to the side. So we weren't the only ones that seen it. And then when we got off interstate, we were going to this place. It's called Pirate's Cove. And it's a little fishing village way out in the middle of nowhere. And we're going down this road. All of a sudden, we see it off the left, and it's wobbling left to right. And as it's wobbling, it's getting lower and lower and lower, and it was headed for the Wrigley's Pass, which is a deep water channel that runs out to one of the main shipping channels that runs out to the Gulf of Mexico. And it went down. There was no doubt that it went down into the water. Then literally within 15 minutes, there was another one there, and within 15 minutes of that, there was another. Total night, I think we seen seven, or it was eight, I think, total that night.
So what year was this?
This was, let me think. God, I want to say 96. I have to ask Linda to be 100% sure. Guys, don't hold me that because I could be wrong.
From the bazooka.
Actually, it even had to be longer than that. You know what? Let me think about this. My son is 24 now, and I think
from the bazooka.
Hell, it might have been.